I'm Stephanie Wilson, and you're listening to Freedom Over Fascism.
We're not an isolated population out in the middle of nowhere that you can pretend is a boogeyman the way they do with, you know, immigrants. LGBTQ people are in every population. And even if the right had their wish, if they could snap their fingers and every LGBTQ person would vanish from the face of the planet, we would show back up again because we appear in every single community throughout history. And regardless of where you are right now, there's an LGBTQ person in your community. That makes it really hard to push these policies. And it's why they're so deeply unpopular, even with Republicans.
Hi, friends. I've talked a lot about how important the 2024 presidential race is. It's everything. Republicans and Trump have already declared their intention to ditch democracy and install a dictatorship. Today, we're going to talk about what's going on in MAGA-captured states where Republican supermajorities have passed a large number of anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ, and anti-women bills. Today, I talked to Montana State Representative Zoe Zephyr, a transgender woman, about the importance of working at the state level to fight the policies intended to divide us from each other, because that's the heart of the battle that we're waging for freedom everywhere. Republicans want to divide us into small groups, so we fight each other instead of joining together to fight their fascist agenda. In my conversation with Representative Zephyr, we talk about this strategy of division. We also talk about how the far right's war against trans people will ultimately not succeed, because trans and LGBTQ plus people are a part of every community. They've existed in every society, throughout time, around the world, because they're part of what it is to be human. So as the fascist right does more and more to limit the rights of trans people to receive medical care or to try to take away marriage equality, it's important to remember that we're talking not about some community out there that can be divided from the rest of society. We're talking about people in every community, every state, every family. And we fight against the attempt to turn us against each other because we understand that every law MAGA passes is about control, their control over everyone else. So, as we're talking about the presidential election that could mean dictatorship for the country, MAGA-captured states continue to propose and pass legislation that attempts to control every aspect of our lives, even though such legislation is wildly unpopular. As you think about what you're doing to protect freedom, think about what's going on in your state. What will you do to help Democratic candidates win office in local, state, and national races? And if you're in a blue state, please consider adopting a red state or looking into how your state can shore up protections for those who might need to leave neighboring states to save their lives. As always, I ask that you help support this podcast by introducing it to someone you know in real life, leaving a review or rating, and supporting us financially on our website, www.freedomoverfascism.us, on our Patreon, or on our Substack. We have conversations coming up with really exciting guests, like the head of ARENA, the founder of Run for Something, the former head of Emily's List. We also have local rural organizers, Democratic messaging folks, and many more. I hope you stick around for all that. Now for my conversation with Representative Zoe Zephyr. Representative Zoe Zephyr, welcome to Freedom Over Fascism.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
I'm so glad you could be here. So I want to talk about, as you might guess, some of the anti-trans legislation that is going on around the country. And I know the Montana legislature isn't in session right now, but a lot of other state legislatures are in the middle of their sessions, especially in MAGA-captured states. And they're passing more and more anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ, anti-women laws. And right now, according to my research, 0.5%, half a percent of U.S. adults and about 1.4% of youth identify as trans. So Can you talk about why you think there is such a focus on trans people in this legislation when not only are so few of people's constituents trans, but also so few people support the legislation?
Yeah, I think that's a good point that you bring up at the end there about so few people supporting the legislation. We've seen from national polling that among Republicans, anti-trans laws rank right at the very bottom of their own caucus's priorities. I believe it was 1% of registered Republicans said that anti-trans policies or and also slash anti-woke policies, they rolled them into one, only 1% cared. And we see this sort of coming to fruition with Vivek Ramaswamy and Governor DeSantis both dropping out of the race. You know, Governor DeSantis really became the poster child for anti-trans policies. And we see him drop out. Vivek made a last-minute gambit on that in Ohio, trying to go all in and wound up vastly underperforming. These policies aren't popular. And I think where it stems from oftentimes is this desire to create a boogeyman. Like we know that they're looking, it's actually probably a plus to them that we're a smaller percentage of the population because they believe that they can other us. And the difficulty that they're going to find themselves running into with this is LGBTQ people and trans people specifically aren't a boogeyman that exists wholly separate from, you know, we're not an isolated population out in the middle of nowhere that you can pretend is a boogeyman the way they do with, you know, immigrants. LGBTQ people are in every population. And even if the right had their wish, if they could snap their fingers and every LGBTQ person would vanish from the face of the planet, we would show back up again because we appear in every single community throughout history. And regardless of where you are right now, there's an LGBTQ person in your community. That makes it really hard to push these policies. And it's why they're so deeply unpopular, even with Republicans.
So it's your belief that they're pushing these policies in their attempt to other lots of different groups or LGBTQ first, trans people first?
Yeah. So there's a handful of things going on there. There's the looking for a boogeyman sort of politically side of things. Part of the far right is looking for that boogeyman specifically to try to figure out how they can ideologically capture their own party. You know, we watch within the Montana legislature dozens of Republicans who have told me, God, I wish I could vote against this hateful policy, but they're going to primary me. They're going to come after me because it's really this rabid subsection of the Republican base. And they're afraid that they're going to be portrayed as not conservative enough within their primary. So we see that attack tactic politically. And then there is a subset of the party, a very small subset that are, you know, quote unquote, true believers in much of the same way that they were never just targeting, you know, trans people in athletics or trans people under the age of 18. We see bills passing now, you know, banning care up to 26. The attacks are never about trans people entirely. They're going to branch out to LGBTQ people. We see the way this dovetails with abortion access. You know, in 2023, the Nebraska legislature, they were filibustering a piece of anti-trans legislation. And the way the Republicans got that bill across the line was to amend it to be a combination anti-trans, anti-abortion measure. They are pairing their attacks. And we're seeing these as the legislation comes in 24 as well.
So the population doesn't really support it. And we've seen over and over again when people are able to vote for policies directly on the ballot that they reject anti-abortion policies, or maybe we should switch it and say they affirm bodily autonomy, which is a much more inclusive term that incorporates both trans people and bodily autonomy for anybody, including women or people who are capable of being pregnant. If so few people support it and given the chance, people will reject it, is it just the fear of the ultra right, or is it something more?
That is a great question. You know, we saw the rainbow wave in 2022 of politicians, and then they came back in 2023 and doubled down with the most horrendous slate of anti-LGBTQ legislation, over 500 bills that year. And then in 2023, we saw the way they failed at the polls then. We saw Kentucky with Beheer and then Virginia taking House and Senate. And what we watched them do is come back in 2024 and say, no, 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 this time we're going to lean in harder. We're gonna really, you know, make this a big talking point. And they're funneling millions into this. They have Hampton Institute funneling a bunch of money into pushing anti-trans policies. They're politically popular. So the question is, yes, why is this happening? And I do think there is a large part that is trying to capture the party from within. And then I do think there are individuals on the right who are trying to push and saying, oh, if we push this hard enough, if we repeat it long enough, if eventually we will get buy-in from our party for this. I'm not sure that's going to be the case. I think, you know, we're seeing really heinous laws and we're seeing them pass in states across the country. But we're not seeing buy-in, large-scale buy-in from Americans across the country. And we're starting to see, you know, pushback. Governor DeWine in Ohio came out and said what, quite frankly, most Americans understand, which is that these healthcare decisions are healthcare decisions that should be made between a parent and their child. People get that by and large. You talk about bodily autonomy in Montana. One of the things that we see, and it's why the care ban has been enjoined in the courts, so it hasn't gone into effect, is people understand that one, parental on the parental side of things, parents should be working with their children, doctors, clinicians, et cetera, on this care. Two, it's not the government's place to come in here and say, no, 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 you know, we follow best practices in all sides of medicine, except for this one. In this one, we get to tell you that's just not how government should be functioning. That's not our job.
It's not your job. And yet they are saying that, you know, they're coming between medical decisions between a parent, a child, and a doctor, or a person and their doctor, and between pregnant people and their doctor. So my sense is that it's about control and trying to divide us against each other. I heard somebody talk about it in the context of foreign interference, but I think it's all part of the same thing, is from without and within, they're trying to atomize the population, trying to break us into little tiny pieces and fight against each other. That's where we have the chance to turn it around, is if we all realize that the attempt to divide us against each other is intentional and that it's all the same playbook and it's all the same goal, and which is to control every aspect of the lives of the people who live in America. Yeah.
You have really two interesting threads there that you're pulling. The first of which is the control side of things, and the second of which is sort of the atomization, the fracturing of, you know, American communities by pretending there is this threat coming to destroy the community. And I think it's really interesting how that functions, because how those two things work in conjunction with one another. You know, we see legislation, you know, by its very nature, when it comes forward, it'll say, hey, this bill is about insert topic. It's just about, you know, we really want to talk about this particular book that we think shouldn't be here. Or we really want to talk about, you know, healthcare under this narrow circumstance. But as you look at all of the different bills that are being brought, it is never about one particular instance. It is about, as we're seeing very openly here in 24 with, you know, bills that are looking to remove entire legal recognition of trans people in various states, like Senate Bill 458 in Montana that passed last year, you watch these bills come forward. And you see the way that the attacks are all about control and all encompassing. The government is going to jump into your life and say, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, down to my birth certificate, driver's license, burial information, et cetera. And Interestingly, when they stand up and talk on these bills, they say, oh, it's just about this. But when you look at the people who are fomenting the anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ panic, they are not talking about one narrow band. And the angry person who goes into a Target and, you know, tears down the pride display or pulls the Sports Illustrateds off the shelf in a rage isn't thinking to themselves, oh, you know what? I wish there were this sort of regulations. I wish, you know, the NCAA had a, you know, year longer wait period when it came to HRT. They are consumed with anti-trans rage and anti-trans panic. And that is part of the goal to split apart the community. And the interesting thing is, by and large, behind the like big media pushes, it doesn't really happen. You know, I talk to Republicans on a regular basis, many of whom have strong disagreements with me on policy. Very, very few of them care that I'm trans. Very few of them care that their neighbors are trans or that the, you know, 12-year-old trans girl is playing soccer with her friends. They don't care that. They want to talk about, you know, taxes, and they want to talk about, you know, fentanyl and border security and et cetera. By and large, that's where we are having our big disagreements and our fights. When it comes to LGBTQ people, most of them have someone in their extended family or know some. And that's ultimately why those attacks, I think, fall short in the end. It's a long arc to get there, but eventually they will fall short.
One of the things you said where they want to talk about fentanyl on the border, I think is it's the same charge, and this is from the far right, that they are infecting our culture and our blood, and therefore they must be stopped. And that they can start with trans people, or it can start with LGBTQ people, or it can start with Jews, or it could start with Spanish-speaking people, or it could start with anyone you want to choose. But the point is that they exist.
And that's, they are looking for others. And it's why, yes, you know, we see the way in which the sort of a target du jour ebbs and flows. And, you know, there's moral panic around gay people. And then suddenly it's migrant caravans. And then it's CRT. And then, you know, this George Floyd protests. And then, yeah. And then suddenly it's, you know, disappears and disappears. And now it's, you know, DEI and trans people. And the name will change. And again, largely you have it seeking to find communities to other. And the more we work to make those communities feel a part of ours, a part of the communities, you know, I think about, we had in my city of Missoula, Montana, you know, in 2020, a group of Afghan refugees that came in. And the work to make sure that members of that community feel included and are put into places where their voices can be a part of the process is the biggest defense against people saying, you know, oh, we can other those folks. Because I talk about, you know, anti-LGBTQ attacks and saying they fail because LGBTQ people crop up in your community regardless of what you do. And so it's important as we come to other communities that, you know, aren't inherently going to be a part of every community, that we work to make them feel included. I want to dovetail to some of the ways that the sort of anti-immigrant and xenophobic more largely attacks sort of wiggle their way in. You know, in Montana, we had a Senate bill that passed last year. It was enjoined in the court, so it's not going into effect, but it was a bill banning TikTok. And it was interesting because it was talking about the way, you know, oh, your data is being given to these social media companies who are doing bad things. And a lot of my colleagues, a lot of bipartisan support was like, yeah, you know what? Social media companies have really gone overboard with our data. But the attorney general came in. And the attorney general, Austin Knudsen from Montana, came in and said, this is the first salvo in China's war against America. One of the representatives who sat next to me, Representative Neil Durham, said that children were choosing to worship the Chinese Communist Party over America when they used TikTok. and you watch the way in what should be good policy, protections against social media companies taking and misusing our personal data. And we did not get that bill in the end. Democrats proposed an amendment to change it to be a broad sweeping protections for social media. But we watched the way in which those on the right were more interested in creating a boogeyman out of China than providing actual protections, actual consumer protections. And that's just one of the ways they wiggle the xenophobia in.
And truthfully, you can look at TikTok and say, we really do have a national security problem here, because China gets to define what the algorithm is. And so in some sense, China gets to say who sees more of what, right? And so once again, it can have an effect on atomizing the American population, which is not xenophobic. It's the way things are. I mean, Zuckerberg has that data and has the ability to change the algorithm. Elon Musk has completely decimated Twitter.
Yeah, and you talk about sort of destructions of public squares and the way that control gets used and, you know, leveraged in public squares. And so you look, and one of the things we talked about this bill is it said, you know, Chinese government is going to have your data or you have your information and can use this in any way, shape, or form. But there was nothing saying that, you know, Meta or X could not sell your data to a foreign national company to do the same thing. Now, when it comes to national security, that is really solved at the federal level. You know, we watched, I think it was Grindr, that was owned by a Chinese company and had to get divested and shifted to an American company. And like, I imagined when this was coming before, when TikTok was coming before the federal government last year, that's the direction it was going to go. That they were going to say, hey, you're going to have to divest and have this owned by sort of a subsidiary that's completely untouched.
So I want to shift a little bit and ask you, a lot of these red MAGA captured states are passing these laws, whether they're actually going into effect, anti-trans laws or not. And then there are states who are sort of in the middle. And then there are states that proclaim themselves to be safe states. I live in Massachusetts. We have laws protecting trans people and medical care and all of that. There are other states. What do you see as the importance of safe states? And where do you think that people who live in what they assume or think are safe states are maybe not seeing the whole picture?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think the first place we have to start with is the impact that safe state legislation has already had. You know, we looked at Attorney General Ken Paxton from Texas, who sought medical records of people who had left the state to receive gender-affirming care, and went after Seattle Children's Hospital and said, give us that patient data. And Seattle Children said, Washington passed a safe state law. We can't give this to you, and we're not going to. That protects LGBTQ people who had to flee Texas to receive care and to receive the care that saves their lives. So that's on that side of things. When it comes to what people who are living in blue states can do to help, and how do they perceive the issue of LGBTQ rights, it's important. I think that it gets made out to be both better and worse than it is in red states. And there's a passivity in blue states. I've talked to a lot of people from states, particularly in early 23, who are like, well, you know, I can send you $20, but I can't do much else because, you know, my state's great. And it was like, actually, you need to pass these safe state laws. Actually, if you're in California, the governor vetoed a couple. You need to put pressure on your legislator to override that veto. You need to push, because what we are seeing is the right is going so far in these, as you called them, MAGA captured states, to make life, the conditions of life, impossible for LGBTQ people on the ground. That having safe states to go to or to receive care from is hugely important. On the other side of things, I think there are people in blue states who envision red states as you know, almost the wastelands of, you know, no care here, or there's no community there. Or, you know, if you are an LGBTQ person, why don't you just leave? You know, come to Massachusetts, come to Washington. But we can't, for the same reason that the anti-LGBTQ policies will fail. Because even if every LGBTQ person got up and left the red states, LGBTQ people would appear in those states again. Because we are part of what it means to be human. We are part of what it means to be in community, because we're a part of every community. Now, individually, if an LGBTQ person feels in danger, if a trans person, you know, there are parents who have a, you know, trans teenager who's under attack in these states and they have the means to get out, many are doing that, and good for them. They should be in places where they can be safe. But as a whole, our community needs to be in these spaces, fighting for representation, because there will always be LGBTQ people in these places.
I think that is a really important thing to focus on. And one of the things that I'm trying to do with this podcast and with my time and energy is, for those of us that are in blue states, you don't have to say, oh, sorry, I can't do anything. You can adopt a red state. You can start working there. You can put your money. You can put your time. Like, I worked work in Indiana and live in Massachusetts. And you know what? It works. It helps. And people don't begrudge it.
Yeah, There's that side of things. You can obviously help support candidates in red states. You can get involved in sort of grassroots movements in those states, you know, because we know that protecting, you know, abortion access, protecting gender affirming care, protecting voting rights in our democracy is a fight happening individually in each of these states. And they try to sort of cordon off states to make it harder. But also, you know, Montana, we have a trans representative. We have a non-binary representative. Washington State doesn't. Massachusetts doesn't. You know, there are places that you think that are blue where either the size of the state or because it felt safer, people, you know, didn't feel, you know, trans folks like me didn't feel that need to, like, oh, I've got to get into government now to try to help protect my community. I've got to try to get into government now to fix these attacks. So look in your own state as well. Turn inward, because those are the people who are going to be able to push for better policy. You know, if we get a trans person in Massachusetts or New York or Connecticut, Maryland, etc., suddenly those folks can help push better policy in the states that people think are blue. So we need both of those sides of things, helping the red states out and pushing for change in your own states. Local, 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 local.
Right. And one of the people, local. One of the people that I first interviewed for this podcast last year is Veronica Pedrell. She is the first and I think only elected trans person in Indiana, and is now, she was city council. Now she's running for state house.
Yeah. So again, the concerted, like, what, two parts there. What do you do about the concerted effort and how do you protect? And I think they become sort of a similar track. And I noted initially in the last question, local, 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 a lot of the fight where you can be most successful is on the ground at the local level. It's where a lot of the genesis for these attacks began, you know, with, you know, Moms for Liberty types who are now seeing pushback. In 23, they lost 70% of the elections they had an endorsed candidate in. Monumental failure in 23. So getting involved at your local races and pushing back is one of the ways there. And two, a lot of our work becomes calling out the attacks for what they are, recognizing, you know, seeing and reflecting the humanity of these communities and these, back to sort of the broader American populace. And then also, so calling out sort of the attacks themselves, but then also pivoting and looking, saying, hey, here's what we should be doing, you know? There's this anti-TikTok thing, but what if we were talking about broader digital privacy protections? Yeah, they brought anti-LGBTQ legislation and pushed it and pushed it and pushed it. Well, here in Montana, we had property taxes go up, you know, 25 to 40% for some folks. And people are pissed. And they turn and look at a Republican supermajority and say, you spent your whole time passing anti-LGBTQ policy and pro like beer policy and did jack all for our property taxes. And at some point, if we are turning and saying, hey, they're trying to fracture us, they're trying to, you know, split us apart and target these communities, and we are a part of your community and we're doing this thing. And also on top of that, here's policy that we're actually trying to bring that helps people. That's, you know, easier said than done, especially in a digital information space that is siloed in a lot of ways. And so I think my sort of closing to this is that with all of that work being the goal that we're trying to do, the reflecting humanity, the talking good policies, the sort of tearing down the bad talking points, all of that has to be done while trying to keep the walls down. Because if you are talking to someone who is getting their information from, you know, Fox News 24/7, or a far right digital media platform, or a far right silo on their social media, there are words and phrases and things that are going to instantly make the walls go up. And so our work and the hard, hard work becomes keeping those walls down. I talked when I was campaigning and much in my time as a legislator, I promised myself three things. That I would approach every conversation with the following three things. Believing that the person I was talking to came to their beliefs genuinely. That they number two, that they believed that those beliefs were nuanced. And three, that they were willing to change their mind if presented with the right information. That's not true of everyone, but I certainly believe it about myself and the ideas I hold. And I have found that if you bring that into your conversation with people, you help keep those walls down, and that helps them begin to understand LGBTQ people are in our community. Actually, these policies that are just targeting, you know, that are anti-China and not actually national security are fomenting xenophobia against people within our community. How do we handle serious data privacy concerns while caring for our community? Very delicate work, very careful work, but it has to start with keeping those walls. That nuance in people's minds, the nuance in their hearts, and how do you keep that kindness, keep those walls down without absolving people of cruelty, absolving people of harmful, hateful rhetoric and policy? It's hard. It's a Herculean task, but it's one that I think each of us has to dedicate ourselves to if we're really going to make the world a kinder, better place.
So I want to kind of wrap this up by pulling all of the threads together and thinking about, one is the concerted attempt that the right is making to increase their power, and two, what we as the progressive left need to do to come together to make sure that democracy and freedom remain and get better in places where they have been degraded.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Over Fascism. And thank you to our editor, Benji Wilson. Please join our Patreon at patreon.com/freedomoverfascism. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please drop us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. We thank you for choosing freedom over fascism.